This is the Biz News Podcast, one-on-one conversations with experts in business and personal development.
The AI doctor is in. Well, we don't mean a robotic doctor, but management consultant Tommy Ogden, who has some advice about using artificial intelligence in business. Mr. Ogden is co-founder of the Houston-based boutique IT advisory firm, Activera Consulting, where he leads the project excellence and data and AI practices. Tommy, let's set the table for our listeners and our viewers, if you would, by telling them a little bit about yourself and your new company.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm Tommy Ogden. I'm a co-founder and partner at Activera Consulting. I've been in IT advisory management consulting for the energy industry for over a decade now. I've mainly focused on project and program management in the analytics space. So traditional waterfall project management, you know, five phase. I got my PMP certification, which is project management professional, and then started going down the agile path as well. So got a Scrum Master certification, a SAFe practice consultant certification, which is the scaled agile framework SAFe. And I've been focusing on leveraging those agile frameworks in the analytics space for oil and gas, as I mentioned, for the past decade. I was with actually a boutique management consulting firm out of business school for 6 or 7 years. And we were then acquired by Accenture, which is, we were talking about the Houston having the largest area of any city in the United States. Well, Accenture is literally the largest consulting firm in the world. I just looked at the numbers last week and it was 743,000 people all across the world. And they do a little bit of everything, right? They are, if you've heard of that show, Stranger Things, on Netflix, they actually did the visual effects for that show. You don't think of a management consulting firm as having that kind of capability, but they did. So I stayed at Accenture for 4 years before realizing I prefer boutique management consulting firms. And so I got back together with a few of the old firm folks and we co-founded Activera about a year ago.
Now, in terms of your customer base, what is it now and where do you hope to build it?
Yeah, no, great question. And as I said, we're in the energy industry, and what we really focus on is the office of the CIO. So that's the chief information officer or the chief data officer, chief digital officer. Those folks and their director level are typically the folks that we're trying to sell to. We do a lot of project and program management across their various IT initiatives for their digital transformation stuff. And that could include things like cloud migration or Internet of Things, analytics, as I mentioned previously, 5G, blockchain, mobile. I mean, in my mind, those are all the digital transformation items. So we do focus there. We also have a burgeoning merger integration group within our company that just focuses on that. Perhaps you've seen in the news a lot lately, the M&A that's happening in the energy industry. And so there's a lot of opportunity there for helping companies merge two different IT systems, right? You gotta put one company in with the other. And there's a lot that goes into that from an IT perspective. So we also do that kind of work.
And Tommy, what about artificial intelligence? How does that affect your operation?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big one. And when we talked about digital transformation and all the different potential components of that, I would say analytics sort of bubbles up as one that companies like to get involved in first. And that's for a couple reasons. One, it's everywhere in the media, right? There, and stakeholders and shareholders are asking questions of companies. What are you doing in the generative AI space, right? How are you leveraging analytics to add value to the organization? So it's top of mind for a lot of executives. And secondly, it can produce the quickest ROI potentially, in that executives are spending millions, if not more, of dollars towards these digital transformations. And you've heard of ROCE maybe, which is return on capital employed. Well, we look at return on digital employed. And so if I'm paying these millions, tens of millions of dollars for digital transformation for my organization, how am I recouping that, right? Where is that ROI? What are we seeing in the space? And analytics can certainly provide that. We've worked with a super major in Houston to help them stand up their analytics center of excellence. And part of that is building the end-to-end operating model of identifying analytics products that could help the organization, right? So that's ideation, getting ideas into the funnel, then triaging them, framing them up effectively, preparing them to be built, then actively developing them, and then putting them into a production environment and operating them and supporting them so that they can start adding value. And as part of that chain that I just described, we are tracking the value that comes from those products once they're actually being used within the company and reporting those numbers back up to those executives who are funding these types of teams. And so I think analytics is really helpful for an organization to get that early ROI for the digital transformation. And it has the added bonus of allowing them talking points for those shareholder meetings.
I said the term artificial intelligence, but I wonder, that's a broad spectrum. Can it be sliced into individual things that you could talk about?
Yeah, sure. So and you're right. And I went immediately sort of into the analytics space and talked about a bit of generative AI. But yeah, when I hear AI, it is such a broad term. And within that, there's a lot of different subsections. So just to give you a couple of examples, as you're mentioning, one type might be natural language processing or NLP. And that's trying to get a sense of, hey, if I create like a chatbot, let's say, and it's related to, and I'll keep with the energy examples, it's related to drilling and production data, let's say drilling and completions data, which is production data. I can go in as a drilling engineer and say, hey, tell me about the parameters of this well, let's just say hypothetically. And then it will ingest, that sort of text and come back with a specific answer, right? That's what ChatGPT does. Those are the generative AI, LLM, large language model sort of chatbots that you've got. But you also do that with speaking, right? Like Siri on your iPhone might be another example, right? So that's ingesting voice or speech as opposed to written text. And then coming back with a response, right? So that would be like a natural language processing example. Another one could be computer vision. One way that energy companies are using this is for identifying corrosion on pieces of equipment at their assets. So they'll have either cameras that are pointed at certain pieces of equipment, or they will have, maintenance folks coming in and taking pictures of pipelines, let's say, or they could even have drones flying over their assets and recording video and taking pictures. And they can use analytics models to determine whether or not corrosion exists on those assets, and then can prioritize the level of corrosion in order to go out and fix the biggest offenders. So that's another way you could sort of break AI down into something else. And the last example I will give is AI is sort of broad. Then there's, machine learning, which is a subsection of that. And then you could get even further into deep learning. But machine learning is all about predicting the future. And so what oil and gas companies are doing is essentially taking historical data, okay? And they're capturing all sorts of data. and they'll feed it into a model and say, here's the historical. Let's say there's a compressor that's running, okay? And it's got a lot of it's got RPMs, it's got vibration data, it's got a lot of sort of metadata associated with it, and they've got the history of that compressor for the last 5 years. So they will ingest all of that data, and then they'll use a machine learning model to train that model, right, with that data and say, hey, here's where we've seen anomalies. If the RPMs get over a certain threshold, or if vibration gets higher than a certain threshold, or heat, right? If you see those types of markers, then the likelihood of a failure is high. So you need to pay attention to that, right? So you train these machine learning models, you put them out in the field, and they're constantly monitoring these compressors. And when they see things like that, they can alert, the group that's watching over and say, hey, you need to come do some maintenance on this item so it doesn't actually fail. So hopefully that gives you a two, three examples in the energy industry of how they're leveraging artificial intelligence in specific areas.
Tommy, that this is now we are in the spring of 2024 as we record this, and we are often thinking about whether it's our kids or grandkids are graduating from high school or college. If you were of that age, what part of AI would you go into and why?
That's an interesting question. So I have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 4-year-old as of right now. And so I think about that as well. A lot of things they're doing at the school level now and these STEM programs is getting kids into coding early, right? And I think that is a key aspect of analytics, right? I mean, if you're sort of building these models as a data scientist, or if you're trying to pull data from disparate systems and do sort of more data engineering, or if you're a machine learning engineer who's trying to create some back-end pipelines to, get the data, apply the models to the data, and then put those active models into a production environment, every single one of those resources, the data scientist, the data engineer, the machine learning engineer, they all typically have some sort of coding that they need to do to be effective. Right now, the popular language is Python. They're starting to teach that in school. When I was coming up, it was Turbo Pascal, and I know it's evolved significantly since then. But there's tons of languages you can learn. I would suggest SQL, just starting off easily with SQL or SQL. And then sort of going beyond that into Python. So getting kids involved early on with the coding skills that they're going to need to have, because everyone coming out of college nowadays is starting to be well versed in those, even beyond the STEM education, right? I mean, there's kids that are just taking Python for fun, because they know that they're going to be able to leverage it within their jobs to automate tasks to help themselves, or to apply it more broadly to just understand what's going on from an analytics perspective at their organization. So I would say rather than focusing on like NLP or machine learning, like we talked about just a moment ago, it would be setting yourself up with that foundation, right? And really understanding some of these languages, these programming languages that are coming out. That's going to be the most effective thing that you can do.
As you look as a consultant at various industries, and while you're specializing in the energy industry, do you see other industries that are obtuse, if you I might say, towards artificial intelligence, just not taking advantage of it? And if so, what might those be?
So I mean, there are industries that are typically leaders and more laggards as well. The leaders in the analytics and data and big data space have traditionally, I would say, the last decade or so, have been more like insurance, consumer packaged goods, also finance. So FinOps, if you've heard of that, building out using analytics models for building out financial instruments, right? That can be very effective. In predicting the future, let's say, like a machine learning model might. So I would say those are more on the leading edge, whereas the heavy industry that you're describing, right, the energy, those utilities, mining, right, those sort of heavy industries have typically been laggards. One area I will say that is sort of bridged the gap effectively in that middle ground that's more heavy industry is manufacturing, right? Automation has been a huge part of manufacturing ever since, the Toyota production systems of the 50s and 60s. And you go into any factory today, manufacturing firm, and it's, there's automated robot arms, that are putting things in, and right, they've incorporated that as part of their processes of continuous improvement and optimization and lean ways of working. And so I think that that's a good corollary to what the energy industry and these heavy industries should look towards, because manufacturing is, in that same realm. And so I think if you could leverage some of the things in the automation space, and start looking at analytics as a heavy industry, see what the manufacturing groups have done, they could sort of, bring themselves further along that chain to get towards the leaders. The last thing I'll say, I guess, in response to your question is, I think somewhat it depends on the nervousness, we'll say, of organizations. I mean, when you talk about automation, people get a little nervous, right? Are they going to be using artificial intelligence and analytics? Are they going to try to automate my job? And you have seen that in manufacturing, right? Whereas people used to be on the production line and actually turning wrenches, that's a worry in a lot of people's minds. And the way that I approach that question is more augmentation as opposed to automation away from your jobs, right? How can you, as an individual, knowing that this automation is coming, how can you go about leveraging it to augment your work, as opposed to worrying about it replacing you? And that goes back to your question just before this one, Doug, which is, what would you tell kids coming out of school? Well, hey, if you understand those programming languages, if you've got a sense of what automation and analytics is and does and will do for companies, then you should be able to teach yourself and leverage those same tools to augment your work so that you become, ahead of the curve, and sort of differentiate yourself and stand out so that your job is not automated away. Additionally, companies are looking at ways to reskill their employees. So it's not a, hey, this new automation thing is coming in, you're out, right? It's no, let's reskill folks so that they're able to interact with these new models, maybe even build these new models. And that way we keep the people around and we've augmented the entire company as opposed to just an individual. So again, maybe a slightly meandering way to get back to your original question, but I think those are the key industries and where they sort of sit, and then the key thoughts that are happening from a worker perspective as it relates to AI.
Before we get too far along here, we need to tell listeners and viewers how they can get in touch with you to find out more about your company.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're activeraconsulting.com, should be fairly easy to remember. And then for me personally, I'm linkedin.com/Tommy Ogden, which is also very easy, and always happy to respond to folks, open up a conversation, talk more about any of these items.
Well, we have talked about a lot of stuff that you might not have expected. What would you like to talk about that I haven't asked yet?
Sure. So one of the things we've talked about my role, and we've talked about Activera Consulting and sort of what we do. One of the other, I call it really a passion project that I have at my firm is about frameworks. And so I kind of want to stress to folks listening, your listeners, that frameworks are a really solid way to logically approach a problem and to sort of differentiate you from your peers. And let me tell you a little bit, Doug, about the inception of this idea. When I was graduating business school, I was scared. And let me tell you why. I had gone through, multiple months, years even of my life trying to understand different aspects of business. I knew I wanted to get into consulting, but my biggest fear was that day one, I would show up at a client site, on a consulting engagement. They would ask me to solve a particular problem that they had, and I would just, deer in headlights freeze, like, I don't know which way to go, or I don't know how to resolve this thing. Maybe I don't know enough about it, and I got to do a lot of research. And that was sort of my biggest fear. I didn't want to have that deer in headlights look. And so, as I've matured, as a consultant, as I've gotten more experience, I've realized that anybody, not even consultants, but anybody in any industry, in any role, can use frameworks to get over that fear. Right. And so I go back and I talk, I went and got my, MBA at the University of Houston. I got a Master of Global Management at Thunderbird, which is an international business school in Phoenix. And I go back to those organizations and I talk to those students about frameworks, how to leverage them, how to use them to get over that fear, and how to logically structure an approach to problems that's going to differentiate them. And so I think that's an important thing for people to know. And if you do reach out per my previous contact information, I'd be happy to provide individuals more examples of how you can leverage frameworks, things like transformation mapping, which I call the from here to there framework. Things like the impact and feasibility matrix, which I call the prioritization framework, right? So anytime you come across a different problem of prioritization, of trying to get from here to there, right, you can leverage these things to actually approach that problem in a really structured way. So that's another side passion project that I have that I'm more than happy to talk to people about.
You've been listening to the Biz News Podcast. We welcome your input. Send your email to editor@biznews.com. That's BIZGNUS.com. Thanks for listening.